Welcome back to Hair Metal Memories. We are your hosts. I'm Brian.
And I'm Aaron.
Just wanted to say again, thank you guys for messaging us and sending in requests and things like that. You can do so at hairmetalmemoriesiowa@gmail.com, or you can Facebook message us on our Facebook page. Please do that. We've really, really enjoyed that. And we're going to give you a small incentive today to do that if you haven't. If you've thought about messaging us or reaching out or emailing us or something like that, we have stickers.
Lovely prizes.
Yeah. And they're pretty cool stickers, I think. They look like a little pedal and stuff like that. They great for a bumper or for a guitar case or a lunchbox or whatever. Send us an email or a message with your address and we will send you a sticker, and we won't send you any spam. It'll be in an envelope that we write on and very direct from us. So we don't keep mailing lists or anything because we're not that organized. So.
And fun fact about it is we actually made these things years ago and have just like sat on stacks of them and just handed them out to people we know. And then suddenly it was like, hey, you know what? We should tell people who listen if they want one, they can have one, you know?
That's an indication of our level of organization. So yeah, we're not going to spam you. In our news section this time, Cammy from Australia sent us a video for his band Dangerous Curves, and the video is called Good and the Bad. We posted it on our Facebook page. You should check it out. We think if you're a fan of this show, you would like it. They're like a modern hair metal band, and they're really good. We're local musicians, and we like supporting other musicians doing their thing. So these guys are in Australia doing their thing, and we say, like, you know, please go check it out. They're very good at it. And kind of a weird little moment for me this week. So part of my day job is that I run a recording studio, and I was recording this project, recording some Richie Valens tunes this week with some guys, and I got into a conversation with the keyboardist and bassist about the Scorpions. And I told him about like how we're going to do a Scorpions album coming up soon. And I asked him what his vote was for, and he voted for Blackout.
So that is the correct answer.
So I'm pretty sure that's the one we're going to do.
Thank you, musician. Yeah. I don't know.
But it's just another little indication that hair metal people are everywhere, it seems. He got really excited. He played some stuff on his keyboards and stuff like that.
So. Sweet.
And I was poking around, and I just discovered a new website called hairbandheaven.rocks. And I'm just getting my feet wet in this site. Have you seen this site?
This is news to me.
Okay. I just found it today. I wanted to share it with our listeners too, because I discovered that there's a new Night Ranger album and that Reb Beach has a new solo album.
That part I did know, because as it happens, okay, I follow Winger on Twitter, and I follow both Reb Beach and Kip Winger on Twitter for whatever reason. Okay. I don't remember how that happened, but and I've seen little updates, and I'm assuming, if I had to guess, like just sitting here, it's for Frontiers Records, isn't it?
I'm not sure. It might be. Yeah, it was a cool site though, and it was like, I don't know. I just thought I'd pass that along.
Sounds for fantastic. People.
Yeah, there was a bunch of information. There's a bunch of bands on there I hadn't heard of too. So I think like hair metal is alive and well in some circles. So that's pretty cool.
Right on. Keep it going.
Yeah. And I found there's a new video for LA Guns has a new album coming
out.
Yes,
they do. I think it's the third album that they've put out since Phil Lewis and Tracy Guns mended fences and all that stuff and decided to be a band.
Yeah.
If y'all want some really fun reading, and of course, if you're listening to this show, you probably already know, you should read about what LA Guns have been going on, you know, for the last, 15 years, the two LA Guns, and then there was one LA Guns again, and now there's two LA Guns again, and some of them are kind of down on Steve Riley. Granted, not my argument, but, you know, read up on it. It's crazy.
Yeah, they have a new video for the song Get Along. You can YouTube that. And they have a new album coming out in November, so next month. Check out the video. Let us know what you guys think. But today, we are covering the 1984 debut self-titled album by Jafria. Jafria peaked at 26 on the Billboard charts, spent 29 weeks on the
church.
And spawned two singles, Call to the Heart, which was at number 15 on the Hot 100.
So they did actually become a one-hit wonder. They made the top 40.
Yeah. And Lonely in Love, which was number 57. So, yeah, so they had a little traction. Does it pass the hair metal smell test?
Big time.
I thought so too. Yeah, I thought just based on the video for Call to the Heart alone.
Well, and
we'll get to that when we get to our album Diagnosis. But like, I was kind of on the fence. I was like, is this or is this not? And then when I saw the video, I was like, yeah, they definitely are hair metal.
So. I mean, I make some comments about that in my notes about the sound of the album and all that, and how there's some things that's like, well, I mean, there's some other bands I hear and it aren't necessarily hair, but we'll get to that when we get there.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's start off with some history. The band's named after Greg Jafria, the keyboardist. He moved from Mississippi to the West Coast in the early 70s, and he joined a band called Angel.
Featuring Punky Meadows for all you Zappa fans out there.
Yeah. Yeah, guitarist Punky Meadows and bassist Mickey Jones were the ones who formed it, and Jafria joined. They were discovered by Gene Simmons in a nightclub and signed to Kiss's label, Casablanca.
And I think now we have to pay Gene Simmons some money.
Yeah, probably. He's always looking for more money.
Thanks.
Put it on our tab, Gene.
So then we can't talk about Black and Blue, but anyway, go ahead.
To contrast Kiss, Angel wore all white satin outfits, and they were very androgynous and glam in their look and stage appearance. And they were famously ridiculed in the Frank Zappa song, Punky's Whips. Which Aaron just mentioned, and
because he might not be pouting for me.
Yeah, but Punky was like, he was pretty hip to it. He thought it was like the fact that he made Zappa's radar, I think, made him happy. And he showed up at a Zappa show once.
It should make you happy. That's awesome.
Yeah, he was on stage once during that song when Zappa played, which I thought was
sweet.
So he has a good sense of humor about things, which I thought was pretty cool. A couple of fun facts. Their singer, Frank Dimino, sang a song on the Flashdance soundtrack. And their second bassist, Felix Robinson, was the original bassist and keyboardist for White Lion on their first album.
That's right.
So that's a little callback to to season one of the podcast here, getting a little White Lion connection there. And Angel is apparently still active. Which
I found that. I don't believe Greg is involved with them.
No.
But there is a lineup that is a functioning band.
Yeah, they have a new website, which is up and running, and they have like recent tour dates listed. They're playing in Illinois next month.
Go back to 1977 and tell Punky Meadows that you went to their website, and he'll be like, "What?"
Right. Yeah, I just thought that's pretty crazy. We could go to Evanston, Illinois next month and catch Angel playing live. They're playing like 2 days.
We could.
Yeah.
But next month, we're going to go see Gladys Knight, baby.
That's right. Yeah, whole different thing.
And that's going to be the shit.
It will be the shit. And I thought Angel, I hadn't listened to much Angel before. So like I went back and listened to it, and they kind of sound a little bit proggy to me in spots.
Oh yeah.
They kind of sound like Kansas or Styx a little bit. But I got one of their songs. I'm gonna play just a little bit.
I was so curious. I haven't heard an Angel song in like 20 years. So
yeah, this is a part of a song called Tower. So this is a taste of Angel. Angel. I listened to a couple of their albums just to do my research, and I thought they were a pretty good band, actually.
Sounds like something I would rock to.
Sounds like Kansas going into Styx or something like that, with a little bit of a Yes turnaround where they just suddenly switch keys and play a different part together. After Angel broke up, Greg Jafria put his own band together in 1981 with vocalist David Glenn Isley, guitarist Craig Goldie, bassist Chuck Wright, and
drummer... come up in a previous episode.
Yeah, and drummer Alan Krieger. So let's break some of this down a little bit.
Oh boy, do I have an awesome fact about one of them.
Okay, go for it.
David Glenn Isley, the vocalist. Okay. I pulled up a picture of him and I thought he looked really familiar and I was having a hard time placing it. Turns out where I remember him is he played David Silver's neighbor, a washed up rock star, in an episode of Beverly Hills 90210 in the 8th season.
Oh, wow. I saw that he had some acting credits.
Yep. And I wondered. And that's where I remember him from. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. I've seen that whole show.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you knew something about him because he was the one that out of all the people in the band, the vocalist has the least amount of information about him.
That's true. Well, I mean, cause, yeah, he's made some albums and he's put some stuff out, but I think all of his solo records have come out in the last 15 years or so. So there's kind of a gap there, and he did a lot of like acting in between.
Yeah, usually when bands break up and stuff, like the singer goes on to bigger things or at least, you know, different things and plays with bigger people and stuff.
With that sort of voice that he had, you figured he would have been in another band in the 80s, you know? Yeah. He has one of those very, like, kind of like the dude from Survivor type voices where it's like...
Yeah.
Of course, I guess Survivor's run was pretty much not super active by 85 anymore, was it? I mean...
I don't think so, yeah.
I'm not that familiar with Survivor, I'll be honest with you.
No, I think they kind of like, you know, got in and out. They made their money and they kind of moved on. But so Craig Goldie, the guitar player.
He's the playest. Like the singest and the drummest.
He was the guitarist for Rough Cut. He replaced Jake E. Lee. So we get to talk about Badlands. We get to mention Badlands again. Any chance to mention Badlands? So he replaced Jake E. Lee in Rough Cut, and he's also played on the Dio albums.
Dio!
You know, we're huge Dio fans over
Hell
here.
Hell yeah! I believe it's a without looking. I think he played on Dream Evil.
He did, yeah.
And Lock Up the Wolves.
I don't think
No, he wasn't on Lock Up the Wolves. That was somebody else. But and then I know he came back later too.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep, he was on Master of the Moon, and he was on Magica, which I just got on vinyl. So,
and that's such a rockin' album.
Yeah, I just listened to that last night, actually. So I didn't know that I was listening to Craig Goldie at the time. I didn't.
And I think he was in that. He was in the group that was touring with the Dio hologram.
Yeah, he was.
It was like him and other assorted.
It's like the Dio Disciples or
Dio Disciples.
Yeah,
because there's actually like two touring Dio tribute lineups, and the other one was the.
Yeah.
Was the original lineup, minus the singer, obviously.
Right, yeah.
And then I think also the keyboardist died between the first and second albums. Because they ended up, they were just going to be like a tribute band, and they were just going to play Dio songs.
Yeah.
And then they decided that they were going to be a band. Last in Line, that's their name.
Oh, okay.
And then they decided they were going to be a band and make records. And
oh, wow.
So, you know, Vivian Campbell has this little metal outlet outside of Def Leppard.
Okay. Good for him. Yeah. Craig Goldie also co-wrote the song Lady Luck with David Lee Roth for his A Little Ain't Enough album.
I like that album.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of cool. Those are my interesting Craig Goldie facts. Chuck Wright, the bass player, he went on to play bass and sing backgrounds for Quiet Riot. So
he was there for some of Metal Health.
Yeah. He played bass on that song.
Yeah.
Metal Health.
So he was like kind of like in and out of their band.
Yeah.
To this day, I think he actually is the bass player now too.
Yeah, he went in and out back and forth, but he's mostly played bass with them since Metal Health, I think. And he has a whole shitload of session credits that are like way too numerous.
Oh,
to go
into.
Oh yeah,
it gets pretty big.
Yeah, Chuck Wright's had a pretty healthy career. Alan Krieger, the drummer, he played with London. On their Playa del Rock album.
So how many people exactly has London lost to another band?
And he also played with Ike and Tina Turner. Which is pretty badass. There's not much about him online, though. I couldn't find a lot. He's pretty hard to find stuff on. But London has been called like the training school for rock stars. It's like it's had so many famous members that went on to other things and stuff.
We've talked about at least three albums featuring former members that I can come up with.
Right, and we're probably going to talk about more.
It's probably going to keep happening. Who knows? We may even talk about London someday.
Yeah. The Jafria album is co-produced by Andy Johns, who we've also mentioned before, who's produced like, I don't know, everything. He did Exile in Main Street. He did Television's Marquee Moon. He did like a run of Zeppelin albums. I mean, you know, look up his credits. His resume is pretty, pretty crazy. So after they put out the album, Jafria, they opened for Deep Purple. Unlike that, remember when Deep Purple had a revitalization?
Was thing? That would that have been the Joe Lynn Turner Deep Purple vocal era, or was that when Ian was still back? Because it seems like this album would have been right around the time that you would have had Sabbath doing the Born Again tour.
Okay.
So Ian would have been singing there. So I'm wondering if that's when they did the Joe Lynn Turner record.
Yeah, could be. I remember they had like, it was Perfect Strangers, I think was the
is
one.
Is that the one? Yeah.
I think that's the one that came out. That was like their comeback.
You're a little ways and, past what my general Deep Purple yeah. knowledge is. So, yeah, that one I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember being, here's kind of a memory. I mean, when I was in high school, Deep Purple had videos on MTV in the midst of all the others, you know, in the midst of Madonna and all that stuff, they had Deep Purple. And it seemed really, really strange to see like this heavy thing with heavy organ and stuff coming on. And they were like rocking. And
I'm pretty sure Beavis and Butthead watched one of those videos.
Oh, that would make sense, actually. And I bet they loved it. That'd be right up there.
I'm trying to dig back into what it is, but I'm fairly sure. Listeners, if you can shake your fist at that and tell me I'm wrong, please do so. But I think they might have watched that video.
Yeah. And when they're on tour with Deep Purple, apparently Ritchie Blackmore treated them like shit. They had to play with the lights on in the arena. Like so this is an arena tour.
Oh, come on.
They're both arena bands. And he made them play with the lights on. He cut their set from 45 minutes to 25 minutes. And they were forbidden to play guitar solos and encores. So, you know,
Richie, what the hell, dude? Yeah,
over the years, I've heard stories about Richie Blackmore being a dick. This isn't
the first one or anything, but like...
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't sound like fun guy to hang out with.
Yeah, I don't know about all that.
They also opened for Foreigner on their Agent Provocateur tour, which, I mean, that was a huge Foreigner album back in the day.
Is that I Want to Know What Love Is album?
That had a bunch of hits on it, yeah. Yeah, so that's a good break for Jafria, and probably was a good fit for him. They're kind of on the poppy side. When Foreigner was going poppy, you know, Jafria was like a good fit for them. And I think that tour
would make a lot more sense.
Yeah, and I think those shows went really well for them, actually, is from by all accounts that they did a good job and picked up some fans. Jafria is like kind of a little bit of a one-hit wonder. They had this one record. They made another one after this.
And I've never heard a note of it. I will be perfectly honest. Never heard a note of Silk and Steel.
Nope, I haven't either.
They recorded, there's a couple songs. I don't know if they relate to one of the albums honestly yet, but there was a movie in like 85 or 86 called Gotcha, and they have like three songs on its soundtrack.
Yeah.
Along with, like, you know, there's stuff like by Bill Conti, who's the Rocky theme guy on there, and all this other stuff. And
yeah.
They don't. I know they started to work on a third album, but
and there's like some versions of that stuff out there, too.
The singer, he put out an album that has some of the Jafria 3 material on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Haven't heard that one either. But the sales weren't there after the second album. They were kind of done. The record label kind of dropped them, I think. And they
well, on half the band, the bassist and keyboardist went on to do House of Lords.
Yep, and so they went off to form House of Lords, and we'll have more on them later in the season.
Yes, we shall.
Foreshadowing. and then Greg Jafria became a businessman in Las Vegas.
And see, I remember watching an episode of That Metal Show, which I'm sure some of our listeners used to watch. And I don't remember who they were talking to or who the interview was with, but it was with somebody who knew Greg Jafria, I believe. Mm-hmm. And they said something to the extent of like he got in with a company in Vegas that was one of the ones that like when you get the slot machines that play music and shit.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he's one of those companies. So
yeah,
I could see him being like, why do I need to make music? I just made an ass pile of money just by being like, hey, look, we invented this thing.
Yeah, he became CEO of that company that built the gaming machines, and they built theme park attractions too.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I love the rock and roll, but if I got a payday like that, I'd be like, yeah, see ya, whatever. I'm doing nothing from now on.
Yeah, and after that, he got involved with running casinos for a while. So I was just like, man, go Greg Jafria, I guess. I'm having a hard time talking today for some reason. What memories do you have of Jafria?
Well, my memories are few, because like the thing is, I'm pretty sure I missed this entirely, like coming up. But working in the places where I worked, where classic rock radio was a thing, for some reason, Call to the Heart was part of like the local classic rock station's playlist.
Yeah.
And as a result, I kind of always thought it was like a 70s song, because I could hear it, almost hear it being something that came out of like the tail end of the 70s.
It sounds like a 70s song, and, yeah.
You know, or maybe like maybe it was in like a Rocky movie or something like that. I could picture that sort of thing. Yeah. So it wasn't until just sitting here doing like Wikipedia dives one day about something else. I don't even remember what it was. I got down the hole and got to this band and was like, is that that band that did that song? So I decided I was going to buy the album and listen to it. And so turned out, yes, I was right. It was the band that did that song. And that was pretty much what I knew.
Yeah.
What about, I mean, you knew about this when it was like a thing, right? Or
vaguely. This is the one I have the least amount of memories for out of all the albums we've done. I remember hearing the song Call to the Heart, and I'm pretty sure I saw the video at the time. So I was familiar with that song, but that was about it. And I remember them being talked about in the same breaths as like a lot of other bands, but I didn't really go check out their stuff. I never had their album. I didn't even have the cassette or anything. Well,
they feel another one of those bands like Winger or something like that, or Mr. Big, who are like all these like crazy awesome players who are like, well, we want to make big hit records too, you know? I mean,
yeah,
because like when you listen to it, you can't like say that it's not like expertly played or anything,
right? Yeah,
I mean, they're nailing it, they're great,
right?
But it's also, I don't know,
yeah, it's kind of tempered in a way,
yeah, that I did find a crazy fact. I was
okay.
Diving into this, and one of the
people, crazy facts.
One of the people who was one of the assistant producers, I don't know, or assistant engineers on this album, was a person named Lee DiCarlo. I've never seen this name before. I'm unfamiliar with it. So I went diving into him, and his credits are crazy.
Mm-hmm.
This person who was involved with the Jafria record, one of his first engineering jobs was on the self-titled Black Sabbath album.
Whoa.
His next credit 2 years later is on Funkadelic's first album.
Oh, wow.
And then I see Bruce Cockburn and Legs Diamond and the Chicago album Hot Streets. there's a couple Angel records that he worked on.
Okay, that makes sense.
Joe Perry Project, Yoko Ono, wow. Graham Parker. Bill Conti records, Quiet Riot, Aerosmith. I mean,
that's all over the map.
A Black Label Society record.
Oh, no kidding.
I mean, okay. Yeah, a couple Dio albums. I see like on the Dio anthology, he's credited as an engineer. So I'm assuming that means he worked on other records because, you know, it's a compilation. But
right, yeah.
So yeah, this dude's got massive amounts of credits, and I've never heard of him before.
I've never heard of him before either. And nope. I follow a lot of recording circle stuff. So
right. And this is,
you know, that's the fun part of doing these podcasts, is you discover like these, you know, here's a name I've never heard of before, and somebody who's intimately involved with like really huge things that everybody's heard of.
You never know where all the credits in your record collection are going to end up connecting to, and it's right. Just ridiculous, you know?
It is ridiculous. It's a small world after all. All right, let's dig into the record. This album is more synth heavy than any of our previous albums, for sure.
Right, and not even just like in a Greg Jafria keyboard way, but like synths.
It's right.
You know, like
yeah.
Listening to this record, one of my first thoughts was, "Is there like Fairlight and shit on this?"
There is Fairlight on this.
Yes, because then I dig and I was like, "Oh, there's a Fairlight programmer. Look at that."
Yep. And some of the criticisms of this album is that the synth tones are dated, and I think maybe some of those comments came out like 20 years ago or something, because nowadays analog synths are all the rage again. So I think,
I think
history might actually be more kind to it now.
Well, yeah, to be fair, think about it, in 2000 or 2001 or whatever, like how many people were, you know, those type of synths and that type of sound was super passe. I mean, you know,
yeah. Yeah, and I'll be honest, I love synths, so my beef with this album wasn't the synths, but this also is not my favorite album that we've done.
Nor I.
Yeah, it veers a little on the cheesy side more than I generally venture to.
I'm not a big Journey fan, so I didn't get excited about a lot of this.
Right, yeah. And I stopped and I thought about it, and like, what about it don't I like? Because I do like the keyboard sound, and I do like the guitar sounds. And I mean, it's a great sounding record. But I think it's a lot of it is like the lyrics. Because I thought about, you know, like David Glenn Isley, he's not a soft vocalist. He's a tough sounding vocalist. He sounds like he's a rocker. I mean, he's singing sensitive songs.
Yeah, he's got that broad, bombastic voice. I mean,
yeah. And I made a note of what you just said. Is like they kind of have a lot in common with Journey, you know, sound wise and everything else.
That band name comes up in my notes.
Yeah. I also noticed a lot of the songs on this album, this is unrelated to that. I do like it. I just don't like it as much as most of the other stuff that we've covered. A lot of the songs fade out too, which I thought was kind of interesting.
They do, don't they?
There's a ton of them that fade out, which would, our friend Blue Jack, who's been a guest on the show, that would drive him nuts. He hates fade outs. So there's a hi, Blue Jack, if you're listening.
You're going to love this album, dude. Yeah. You should listen to it.
All right. Let's dig in. The first song, Do Me Right.
My first thought, literally as soon as the keys kick in that song, mm-hmm. I pictured somebody like running in place and jumping rope and lifting weights and probably in sweat clothes.
Like a sports montage?
Yes.
Yeah, they start out right away with the pomp and circumstance of all the synths. You know, it's like, you know, am I listening to an Emerson, Lake, and Palmer album?
See, the funny thing is what I said is I was like, this kind of sounds like better produced Survivor.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. There's some really cool delay effects on the vocals on this song.
Oh, yeah. That's
cool. With like panning and stuff, like the vocals run back and forth between your ears and stuff. I have no idea what the lyrics of this are about, unless it's just a thinly veiled sexual reference. You know, do me right. You know,
probably.
I'm probably overthinking it. Maybe that's all it is. There's some pretty decent guitar palm muted riffs, and there's a pretty good solo in it too.
Honestly, it's about as close as they got to rocking on the first side of the album.
Yeah, yeah. Let's play that solo just to kind of
do it up.
Get into a little bit. Yeah, that's some pretty good guitar playing in there, especially, you know.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it almost seems like at odds with the rest of the music. So I'm like,
it kind of does.
You're a good shredder, man. And this stuff is so, like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things that I think will be a little bit of a theme for me on the album is that with all those synth layers in there, the guitar solos kind of get buried a little bit. I don't know whether that's, I think it's like some sort of EQ issue or something like that with it.
Because all the keyboards are real up front.
Right. They really are. And it's hard when you have like synth pads. I mean, this is going a little too far down into the recording thing probably, but like synth pads, they're very rich and they cover a lot of frequency area. And so if you're not careful, anything else mixed in with that in that frequency range, you're just going to lose it.
And when you have what's most likely your left hand keyboard and your right hand keyboard,
yep.
You know, if it's the 80s, man, you got multiple keyboards going on. You are just throwing out so many tones.
Yep. And there's a lot of them in there. But this is a pretty poppy song. So we're starting out like, you know, here, you know, we've got a good pop song kind of a thing with a little Keith Emerson action going on the keyboards and stuff like that.
He's certainly a gifted keyboard player.
Yeah. Then we go to Call to the Heart, and this is the hit.
What we will call their big hit single.
Yeah. Yeah, this is their moment.
With a bullet.
With a bullet. There's a video for this song. I watched the video, and it has Greg Jafria playing two keyboards, one on each side of him, which I thought was cool.
Thank you.
And it just, you know, and a lot of times there's not that much going on in the song when he's playing two keyboards. So it's just, you can tell it's for show. But behind him is an impressive Moog synth. Which is like the big wall. I mean, it looks like a Keith Emerson synth where it's like with all the patch bays and stuff like that.
I admittedly didn't know there was this video.
Yeah. So that was the highlight for me, is like looking at that. Oh, wow. He has this giant wall of synth stuff. And there's also wind blowing through all the band members' hairs. And that's the moment where I knew that Jafria is hair metal.
Yeah. They were fond of making sure the hair was in the wind in those videos.
Yep. Yep, you watch that video and you're like, yep, they're definitely hair metal.
But yeah, and this is one where, like, you know, yeah. I mean, I dig this tune. Like, I think it's totally cool, but you can totally hear other bands. You can hear Journey in this song.
Yeah.
The other band that came to my mind that you can kind of hear in this song, and I don't necessarily like admitting it, but is Bad English.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You can hear it.
And there's a strong Journey connection to Bad English.
Well, so. Yeah. So I'm,
yeah. I kind of like the message of this song. I mean, it might just be about like getting back together, but there's also this idea that even though you're broken up with someone, that you're always kind of connected and kind of remembering each other. And I thought that's kind of a positive idea.
Aww.
You know, it's like sort of like, you know, even after you break up, it's like you have this connection.
What,
you know,
a very neutral standpoint to adopt in the song. Right. I'm sorry. I'm just like shitting all over your nice theory here.
I like the there's a twinkling keys bridge into like the buildup that I think is pretty cool, and I kind of wanted to play some of that.
Yes.
There's a lot. You can hear those gated and verbed drums, which is
boy.
The trademark 80s drum production sound.
I don't know if I should thank Phil Collins for his innovation in sound or not. I mean, sometimes it sounds cool, but then it's like, wow, those drums do not exist in nature, do they?
No.
Like, if you were to go see them live, they would have to do some serious, like...
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, some serious tweaking to make their drums sound that...
Yeah, they went to great lengths to make them sound fake. next up, we've got Don't Tear Me Down. These lyrics are the opposite.
My note was, he says shit.
You know, he's got the lyric in there, crazy bitch, which doesn't hold up well.
Nah.
I'm looking at you, Buck Cherry.
my first note was, boy, these guys had some issues with the chicks in the 80s, didn't they?
Yeah, this is an evil woman song, which is like a trope of, like, you know, songwriting. That was always like, oh, blaming that woman, you know, she's so bad and she done me wrong and, you know, and all that stuff. This is definitely in that mold.
But I did notice that... Craig gets a big ripping solo in this song.
He does.
And I noticed this also one of the three times that he got a co-writing credit on the album.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, and actually I had marked that solo. So let's
play shit.
That. Yeah, let's play that solo. That has a very composed feeling to it. Craig Goldie's definitely not a slouch. I mean,
no, not at all.
Yeah, I mean that I don't know. That's a pretty great solo.
Which is funny because you know when you think about Dio, your first thought is like Vivian Campbell,
right? Yeah.
Or somebody like that. And it's like, man, Craig put out some
Yeah, he did a lot of that work. And this song has kind of like that proggy pop feel to it for me, other than the lyrics. I think
right, but it clearly has that very like.
Yeah. If you took the lyrics away, I think this could be like an Asia song or something.
I was just going to say, it's like right in there, or that 90210 by Yes or whatever it's called.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You snuck in two 90210 references. Uh-huh.
Do I smell a runner?
Next up, we've got Dance. This one seems like it was written to be a hit.
Yes, I actually, all my notes, while I don't say what you just said, they all kind of hint at exactly what you said. I said, it actually kind of rocked, but like in like a sanded down way.
It's got like a pretty straight 1-4-5 chord progression, and it like the word dance seems to be used pretty loosely, alternating between like actual dancing and some sort of sexual metaphor.
I did say, how was this song not in an 80s sexploitation film?
Right, no kidding.
But then I also said, well, they were in the movie Gotcha. But then the other thing I noticed as I was listening to it, when I was rocking out and we would get to the verses, I could hear in my head, do you want my head off? Because it uses that same progression.
Yeah.
So I was sitting there, had ELO running through my head while they were playing that.
Yeah, this song starts with him, like, you know, the guy, the narrator of the song, drinking the night away. And then is he maybe doing cocaine, too? Because he has that, I'm going to draw me a line.
I would imagine.
But the chorus of the song and that repeated dance, 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 dance toward the end, it kind of annoyed me and it kind of lost me. And it made me, you know, I know it was designed to be a hit, but like they seemed a little too eager for it to be a hit. And, you know, it's like you're getting too grabby. You're trying to manipulate me. And
this isn't the first album we've listened to where you hear songs on there where it was like, you wanted this to like to be like a big fat hit, didn't you?
Right. Yeah.
Once again, this is the second of three Craig songwriting credits.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Craig Goldie got a song.
Once again, I'm pretty sure this one has a ripping solo as well.
Yeah.
So, like the ones that have the ripping as solos, if you go back and look, they're usually ones that he helped pen.
Yeah. Yeah. And my guess, I mean, I don't know this, so grains of salt here. During the solo sections, there's kind of like a different chord progression and stuff like that in that classic hair metal style. My guess is that Craig Goldie wrote the chord progression for what he soloed over, and that's probably where his songwriting credit comes from. But don't, you know, that's just me shooting from the hip, so that's not a fact.
I mean, it tracks. You're not taking any major liberties there.
Next up, we have Lonely in Love. And this one, I really like I like the lyrics on this. It's like they're you know, the whole concept is they're meant to be comforting someone going through a tough time, presumably after they've been dumped. I can dig that. That's, you know, that's something relatable.
my note said, well, you didn't want to be let down like two songs ago.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Emotionally, it's all over the map. But it's a roller coaster.
It's also another one of these that isn't quite a ballad, you know? Right. Kind of like Call to the Heart isn't quite a ballad. It's like kind of edging up to the line of it without actually being one. And this one actually, once again, I don't know why this is what kept going through my head when I was playing this album, but I thought this song would be like on the end credits of an 80s movie.
Oh yeah,
like right after the plot's been resolved and it goes to black and the credits start rolling, you could hear this playing.
The uplifting moment as you walk out of the theater kind of thing. Yeah, the music definitely cries out power ballad. And there's a pretty decent guitar solo on this too, and it's so I'm going to play this one. It's in a major key too. So like, you know, more props to Craig Goldie for
I noted pretty good solo.
Yeah, let's check out some more Craig Goldie goodness.
Yeah.
the other thing I like that Craig Goldie does on this song and a bunch of the other ones too is he does a lot of those palm muted licks where he's just kind of like pulsing a lot. I mean, in a way, what else is he going to do? The synth is filling up right. so much room.
It could be seen as either a stylistic choice or a, well, right. look, there's only so much room in the song for me in this spot.
But he's got good taste. He knows where his spot is. And so he fills it up with something that's kind of interesting, you know?
Now, you know, one of the other things about this record, though, is it did come out on MCA Records, as we started. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. MCA has like a really weird track record with like rock bands in the 80s. Yeah. Like a lot of bands just didn't do well there.
Right.
So much so that there was kind of a running joke that it stood for Musician Cemetery of America. But
yeah, there's that Leonard Skinner song, Working for MCA.
See, they got it. Look what happened to them. They were wildly successful for years. Blah, 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 blah.
And David Glenn Isley sounds a lot like Steve Perry on this song. I thought this was
he's really got some Perry moves, dude.
Yeah. Which is kind of a compliment. I mean, Steve Perry's got a
great
voice,
he's certainly
no
slouch as a vocalist. That's not what's being questioned.
Yeah. Next up is Trouble Again. And this one's kind of it's kind of an anthem for the bad boy who doesn't give a fuck.
And it, honestly, when my first note was, you know what? So far, this may be my favorite song to this point of listening through it.
Yeah.
Because it seems like they didn't rock as much on side A. They like tucked stuff all the way to the B side. I'm like,
yeah, okay. They saved the rocking for later.
Clearly.
Which, you know, not always a good move, but and this song has a really cool bridge with some back and forth playing between Craig Goldie and Greg Jafria.
Thing I noticed. That was cool.
Yeah, where it's like, you know, ooh, synth and, you know, it's like a dual.
And you know, that brings up a weird thing. It's like you got these two guys who are clearly mm-hmm. virtuosos at their instruments. Why didn't they do more of this on the record?
Right, yeah.
Why is it only until we get to side two that we get some amazing back and forth by these people who you know are some dexterous musicians who could have been doing...
Yeah.
It's just so like... Why did you hold this back?
they didn't tap their potential.
But, no kidding.
Yeah, but let's play that part because it's pretty cool. It's one of the high points of the album, I think.
Absolutely.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, right? Yeah, that's pretty sweet. That's like, you know, I mean, metal guitarists make a living doing that shit.
Right, yeah. after that, we've got Turn Me On, which is a... So now we're definitely on the heavier side.
Yeah, now all of a sudden, okay, now we're really freaking rocking. That's when my note, oh shit, we're rocking now. My comment was that it was the best middle section solo on the whole album. Why isn't there more of this on the album?
Yeah. It's there is a great solo on this, but this is one where it got buried in the mix a little more.
Yes, it did.
Where I kind of wanted to hear more of it.
So it's not as impressive to just sit here and listen to a sample for you because it's like, you hear a bunch of super thick Fairlight and all these other, you know, keyboards. And underneath there, this guy's shredding away.
Right.
Also, Craig Goldie.
Yeah.
Co-wrote this one too.
Yep, he did. Yeah, this is another one where it doesn't really have the best lyrics again. It's like, it's about how someone turns him on. It's in the title.
There's not like a lot of allusion there.
And you know, sex is like a classic sex is classic rock and roll. So I'm not trying to harp on this too much. But they're not very subtle in the lyrics is I guess that's the issue
I
have
with
it.
Have intercourse with you.
Turn me on, you know. And Greg Jafria rocks out a little bit on here too.
He did.
There's a modulated bridge and everything on there, which is probably one of the better compositions on the album, actually.
So then once again, we get to, why did you hold back all your tricks to the second side?
Yeah, they should have started out with something like this. Plus, Turn Me On, that's a great album opener, you know?
Yes, amongst all these songs, they should have gone right there.
Then we go to Line of Fire. This one has a really interesting vocal effect on it. And it seems to be about a woman in a dramatic relationship caught in the line of fire, you know? I had the impression that I mean, you know, this is me shooting from the hip again, you know, looking at the lyrics. I had the idea that it was maybe a female musician trying to use her sex or love to advance her career, and somehow that blew up in her face. You know, that I'm extrapolating a lot there. It might have nothing to do with any of that, but it seemed to fit what I was reading in the lyrics. And another good Goldie solo in there.
It's just funny because I just keep freaking out at this point. I'm like, once again, why do we hold back all the damn rock songs for side B?
Right, yeah.
We are like three songs deep of just like straight rocking, at least in the Dufria context at this point.
I'm yeah.
Like, boy, you have held all of this back.
Then we have The Awakening.
My first note was, what the fuck? I was like, is Dufria doing his like John Carpenter impression? Or?
Right. Yeah, that's a pretty good pretty good summation of it. What the fuck? This is the shortest track, mercifully.
Then I have another that says, and a kid's choir.
Yeah, it starts out with a devil voice and sound effects, and then a children's choir.
I mean, don't get me wrong. This is like kind of rad and bizarre, but just in the whole context of the record, it's like, where the hell does this come from?
Yeah, we've got children singing Everybody Loves Me over and over again. And there's really nothing on the album before this that would indicate something like this was going to happen.
And I wasn't sure, but it kind of sounded like the end bit, at least, was in like this weird like 7/4, 7/8 time signature thing.
Oh, I didn't even get into it. I was just sort of like too baffled by it.
Oh, yeah. I kind of got into this little groove on the little kind of progression that comes in after the children's choir. And I was like, and y'all know 7/8 too. And not one other section. Would you do like some cool 7/8 shit? All right.
Yeah, I really thought this song felt out of place. I mean, here we are, you know, the song before the last song on the album, and now they're throwing weirdness at us. And it's like, you have this very poppy sounding slick thing, and then you threw in like something.
I guess what we're saying is we have issues with your sense of pacing.
Right. Right. Yeah, not well paced. My best guess is that this is meant, because it goes right into the next song.
So it does.
So is this supposed to be the intro? Is that the idea?
Like live, it was like of a piece.
Yeah, maybe that was the idea. Is like, this is
which is funny because for the last song, Out of the Blue, my first note was this is a fairly nondescript closer.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, it's at 5.5 minutes. It's the longest track,
honestly. And what I said, because I'm looking at it's a 45 minute record.
Yeah,
and without this song, it would be 40 minutes. And I think they should have made it a 40 minute album. Yeah.
Well, and then if you got rid of The Awakening,
I actually argue to keep The Awakening and just put it somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. Like in the middle.
Put it somewhere in the middle. The Awakening would have been good in the middle. So it just kind of serves as a nice little middle of the album kind of, gotcha.
Like the beginning of side two or something.
Sure. It's kind of like this rad intro attached to this really nondescript tune.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm sorry. I mean, they put out a record that went gold or whatever. So I've never done that. So let's just establish that first. So
sure.
But since I'm clearly a producer, I wouldn't have put this song on the record.
It steals a Neil Young lyric too. That Out of the Blue and Into the Black. So they steal a Neil Young lyric.
I'm not gonna hate on them for that. I like Neil Young. Young too. So like, if they want to do that, that's cool and all. But boy, you really could have picked a cooler context.
Yeah. Yeah, the one thing I do like about this song is it has a spookier feeling than all of the other songs, which I thought they could have explored a little bit more.
Yeah, they were.
But it's very atmospheric, and I like atmospheric stuff.
Well, sure, yeah.
And it has some cool vocal effects with lots of delays and things. It's kind of like the cool down from the album, and and usually you want to end on a bang, you know.
It's weird. It just ends on a strange. Maybe the song. I don't know if this is real. Maybe I would have liked it better if it wasn't the last song.
Yeah, same. Yeah, this is another one that probably could have been.
I don't know if that's a real thing or not, but yeah, like if you put it, if you would have gotten this over with in side one somewhere,
right, and then started out side two rocking, you know,
sure, and then like close with Line of Fire or something like that. Okay, right.
Yeah, so maybe maybe this album's not sequenced correctly. It would have fared better if it was sequenced correctly.
Why don't we just go ahead and blame MCA for that, since they don't technically exist anymore? Because I think they're, if I'm not mistaken, MCA is probably part of Universal now. And right? I mean,
I have no idea.
Yeah. Listeners, you know what to do. I'm guessing that MCA was swallowed up by Universal. And my guess for that is all those cool 2CD Who reissues that came out in the mid-2000s were all on Universal. And I know that the Who was on MCA in the 70s because I have my copy of Live at Leeds has that MCA logo that was the blue logo with the little rainbow that goes through it, much like on the Jafria album. Yeah. So that's my guess, is that they're part of Universal.
That seems like a reasonable guess.
Right? Okay. Yeah. All right.
Speaking of labels, it's time for Vinyl History Lesson.
So, the Vinyl History Lesson. Well, there's not a whole lot. It had an original run in 1984, and that's about it in the U.S. for a very long time. Yeah. There was a couple pressings in 1985 here and there. There's a Japanese promotional copy. I had my eye on it, but then I was like, do I want to pay that much for this?
Yeah.
No, I don't want to pay that much for this.
What's this going for now? Just out of curiosity.
It starts at my copy that I bought. I have an original Pinkman press, and it ran me like, I don't know, $15. Or I'm sorry, Pickneyville. It was like a $15 record, I think. But mine was in very exceptionally good shape. I decided to see how far up the ladder I could go of affordability before it came like I'm not going to get that one.
Yeah.
So they're not super spendy yet, just because they're not one of those bands that like, there's no cool sample from them, or there's not like a cult thing about them. But it goes pretty dry. I had to actually do some digging, and it looks like actually it last got reissued on vinyl. There's in 85 in Korea.
Okay.
So that's. It's tough. There's some CD reissues from the 2016s. I did just find an interview with a drummer who said that he is working with Jafria right now.
Like, oh, really?
There is a band together that is called Jafria that is working on a new record. Okay. And I see that there is a label that has snagged up the rights to the Jafria catalog and are reissuing them. I don't know if that's going to be on vinyl or not. But there will be Jafria reissues, they say, in 2022.
Okay.
There's not a lot out there. It looks like if you wanted something fancy, there's a couple like limited numbered CD reissues. They're Metal Mind Productions. I've heard of them before. They're a European company. They have like a little digipack fancy reissue of it. But yeah, if you want an LP, you're pretty much going back to original pressings because they just don't exist right now.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah, there's probably no money in reissuing this one.
Right. So. I mean, but the thing is, we're now seeing a bigger reissue market than we used to.
That's true.
Yeah. You know, there's labels like Friday Music. One of their things is going back into the 80s and 90s to some of these bands and reissuing them. That's true. They reissued Queensryche's Empire.
Okay. Okay.
And that's what my copy is Friday Music.
That's
what
my copy is too.
Yeah. I think I remember coming over here and being like, oh my God, dude, you can get Empire again. Holy shit, we need to get Empire. I really like Empire. But Empire's good. Yeah, this is it's not expensive. It's just hard to find because, I mean, there's not a lot of them. So, yeah, you know, if you see one, grab it, I guess. Yeah. How's that for a recommendation?
Yeah, right.
Or just go play one of Greg Jafria's slot machines. You know what? He might actually be happier for you to do that.
maybe if you win, you get like three cherries that plays Call to the Heart.
Boom. Right? Sure.
Yeah. And there's no gear talk this time because I honestly couldn't find anything. I looked. I just found pictures of Greg Jafria with his Moogs and Keytars.
And I just imagine it's once again, it's just like an exposure thing, you know? Right. I mean, they just kind of came and went or were low enough that you're probably not finding a lot of like Guitar World or Modern Musician magazines that talk to any of these people or at least about that. I mean, you know, I have a stack of rock magazines that somebody graciously loaned to me so I could research, and there's just nothing about Jafria.
Yeah, there really is nothing about them.
You know, I mean, we did a lot of digging, and
the drummer doesn't even have a Wikipedia page. I mean,
that's strange,
which is pretty weird. Yeah, and I'm sure Craig Goldie has like all sorts of gear stuff out there, but it's probably from his Dio stuff, which
that's a lot safer bet. Yes,
yeah, probably not from this.
And if Chuck Wright had any, it's probably from Quiet Riot.
Probably, yep. exactly.
So yeah, this one's it's a little more scant episode perhaps than some of our others, but you know, I mean, like, yeah. I kind of wanted to pull it out just because, you know, there's some smaller names out there that I figure we should at least take a look at, you know.
Yeah, we're trying to mix it up for you guys a little bit. So, like, you know, for every huge album, we try to do something a little smaller. Because
you will all notice we are 3 seasons in now, and we have not talked about Poison at all.
No,
other than like in passing about other people, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, and there's probably some other bands. Well, we've seen your messages, and we do read your messages, and we know that there's other bands we haven't hit yet. So
no one's asked for Poison.
No one's asked for Poison. Yeah. And one of my favorite records of the hair rock era, we don't even have planned out for this season yet.
Yeah.
And it's a Ted Templeman produced record. I'm not even going to tell you what it is.
Ooh, I know what
it is. He knows what it is. He knows what it is. But I'm just going to float it out there. There's a Ted Templeman produced record we haven't talked about yet that I'm really excited to talk about.
Yep. That'll probably
listeners,
be season 4.
On our Facebook page, when we post about this episode, if you can guess which album it is, it's produced by Ted Templeman. We will give you our thanks at your amazing knowledge.
We'll buy you a drink.
We will buy you a drink. You just have to fly out here.
Thanks for listening, guys, and we will talk to you next time.
See you later, everybody.